This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Live off the record with Chivago Lang is sponsored by BTC, Fidelity Bank of Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z-Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. You all heard me calling all yesterday Monday. Did you all hear me doing that? I realize that people don't correct me now because they say they think we're doing a pre-recorded show. And so please forgive me. I don't even know what happened to Tuesday. I ain't gonna lie to you because I missed that entirely, but welcome to today's show. If you want to give us a call at all today on the show, the numbers will be 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us at 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow, channel 612. So we have a loaded show today. So we're gonna talk with Chef for a little while. But before we talk to Chef, I gotta do a little bit of bragging, my personal self. And so we're gonna do that, and then we're gonna talk in the second hour to the Securities Commission, but I want to revisit this in the first hour too, the BPL situation. So let me just tell you all, you already recall that I was advertising this golf tournament taking place by Cleft of the Rock Foundation to rebuild the village, this charity focused on promoting parenting education. I told y'all, if y'all wanted to come out and see professional golf played by myself, you should come out. None of you did. You didn't come out. So I want to announce what happened at the golf tournament. I want to announce it, and I have someone who's going to come and verify that I ain't lying to y'all. So at the golf tournament on Sunday, the person who won the closest to the pin was Francis Adley of Fidelity. Then the person who got the longest drive was Nolan Johnson, again of Fidelity. In third place, according to the scorecard playoff, was Clinton Clark, Nolan Johnson, Rodwell Knowles, and Bradley Strawn, that Fidelity's team. In second place was Francis Adley, Cresswell Gardner, Antonio Saunders, and Richard Gibson Jr., again of Fidelity. In first place, the team of Wendy Warren of Keystone Solutions, Anthony Ferguson of CFAL, David Harris, and Chivago Lang. Did I tell a lie, Leslie, Archer?
Mr. Lang, you something else. You introducing yourself as the winner. You don't even...
I want to make sure they know. I told them. Did I introduce the results correctly? That's what I'm asking you.
You are correct, ladies and gentlemen. You are speaking to a celebrity right now. Mr. Chivago Lang and his team dominated.
Golf champion, a tournament champion. First time out.
That Charles Barkley thing he was telling y'all, that was just jokes. Like, he had it. He was just playing with y'all.
But the tournament took place, folks. We went well. Tell us about it, Leslie. Tell us about how the team of Cleft of the Rock must feel after the event.
Cleft of the Rock is super excited. Thank you so much to every one of our sponsors. I can just give them a big shout out. Thank you to Craven, Atlantis, Stormy Network, Microfield Securities, GastroCare Bahamas, Track Group, Sandals, Global Radio, Donald E. Thompson and Associates, Keystone Solutions Limited, Bahama Foundation, Bahamas Air, and Greycliff. You guys made this weekend a tremendous success for us, and we are so happy at Cleft of the Rock that you chose to invest in parenting on purpose, in training and providing educational resources for parents to groom up our children right to be responsible, to be marriageable, to be employable adults, and to rebuild the village. So this was absolutely amazing. Thank you so much.
And the folks were really enthused about it, et cetera. In fact, we have some comments from some of the participants. You will hear some of them crying a little bit of sour grape. But producer, let's hear from some of the participants. A great number of really enthusiastic golfers and others who participated. Go ahead, producer.
My name is Rod Notes. I'm part of Fidelity Bank. It's a great charity, and we'd like to thank her first, and we support 100%. And it was fun. We came for worthy cause, and we can continue to do this. Now on to the golf. I have two of my attorneys here. I need to check out the winners. But other than that, we had a good time. The food was great. The ambiance was great. And hope next year we'll be back again. So that
we had a great time out there today. Just off here, Fidelity also, you know, made sure that I participate in the tournament. Don't forget that we're good for you, always. But other than that, it was a nice tournament. We all had fun out there. Just waiting for next year. Hopefully, we also have a basketball tournament. I'd love to see that. That way I can pair up and team up with Mr. Butcher. Yeah.
I'm Creswell, Vice President at Fidelity. I just want to say well done to the organizers. This was a beautiful event. Those of you who have been following golf in the last couple of months, you would know that for the last four charities, we've been here in large numbers. Fidelity is committed to great work and social outreach in the community. So when we find somebody like-minded, you'll be sure to get our full-throated support. So well done. We're committed to you and your program. So you'll hear us reach out in more tangible ways in the weeks ahead. Thanks again.
Fran Adley here, the team organizer. I thought the tournament organizers did a great job today. I want to thank my Fidelity team members who came out. One disappointment. We should have entered three teams, so we could have won first, second, and third. But because we entered two, we'll take second and third and pass it on. Thank you very much.
Marcus Cooper, I always have a fantastic time when I'm not working. But this is particularly good because I got to bring my son out. And it's always a good time when I can parent, even though I haven't seen him most of the day. But I acknowledge and I understand the importance of bonding with him whenever I can. And for me, that's a part of parenting, right? Just understanding the fact that even though I'm not always at home, when I do have the opportunity to do something that's not about homework, it's not about work, it's a good time for me to bond with him. So that was special, being with people that I know. I'm happy to be a part of what Latina is doing. And like Shivago said, this is a crucial time in the Bahamas where we're kind of like in a crisis, if you think about it. And we are losing a generation of men to violence. And a lot of it has to do with not having stable homes and fathers that are involved. And so I think that there could not be a better time for an initiative like this. Having this sort of parenting and being intentional about parenting, right? So you have people that were raised and brought up and kids who just kind of grew up and had to make it on their own. And so I really feel like this is an important initiative. I'm excited about the opportunities that that may arise as a result of this. I wish Latina and Cleft of the Rock all the success in the world. We really, really need this. So for me, I had a great time, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yes, so those are some of the participants who participated. Leslie, any final words about the tournament, about Cleft of the Rock, before we move on?
Yes, I want to encourage everyone, if you've never heard about Cleft of the Rock, just type it in, Cleft of the Rock Foundation. He hides me in the cleft of the rock, that old spiritual song, C-L-E-F-T. We are a nonprofit foundation, and we focus on families, on rebuilding the village, on parenting. We offer educational programs, parenting on purpose for children, to parent children. If you're a parent, a guardian, a caretaker, go and just sign up for the newsletter to stay informed. You can actually go to the website now and pre-register for next year's tournament. So it's the line, you have to, a title to defend now, right? You and your team. For next year, October, for the second annual Cleft of the Rock tournament, just go on the website, Cleft of the Rock Foundation, and just final again, Latina is telling out our partners, and then I'll be done. We want to thank Craven, Atlantis, Stormy Network, Migrafil Solutions, GastroCare Bahamas, Track Group, Sandals, Global Radio, Donald E. Thompson and Associates, Keystone Limited, Keystone Solutions Limited, Bahama Foundation, Bahamas Air, Grey Cliff, and FML. These are the companies that have agreed, and they said, yes, we believe in Cleft of the Rock and our vision of rebuilding villages, of supporting parents. And yes, we are here to support you. And thank you again, Mr. Lang, for all of the airtime. Thank you for the tangible and intangible support that you've been to the organization over the years. We really appreciate you and we value you. And we want to encourage you as well on your parenting journey with your own children. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mrs. Archer. We appreciate the work you all are doing. Chef Kalma. Your mic is still muted. Chef Kalma of Tropical Gyro. Chef, your mic is still muted.
Okay, there you go. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Chef, you got stuff. A couple of days left. People who have not gotten in yet still have a couple of days, right?
They still, up until Friday. It closes on Friday, so jump in now, you know, while you got the chance.
How has the movement been for investors on the Arawak X platform since our last discussion where we were at your production up and getting up and running and so forth? How's the movement been?
Been pretty good, you know. It's been pretty robust. You know, we've had a lot of pledges, but more importantly, we've had a lot of people actually committing those pledges with financial payments. So that's always a good sign. We have well over 1,000 persons that have pledged to those. I don't know what the final count is, what the tally is right now with regards to how many people have actually turned those pledges into cash payments. However, we do see a growth and a reaching out of persons daily to what closes. So I think that because people are seeing that we're putting into play the our words and actions, by, you know, with the new location being built out, with the production center, people are starting to gain a little bit more confidence that, you know what, you know, Tropical Giles, Chef Cullman, his team, they're really serious about moving forward and doing what they say they're going to do. And you know, we see it represented in the restaurant. The restaurant is busier than ever.
I wanted to ask you if you were seeing more traffic at the restaurants because of your drive this way.
Yes, without a doubt. We're seeing a lot of traffic. And you know, it's pushing us even to move quicker to try to get this second location up and running to ease the burden on Rosetta Street right now. Because my store is working very hard to try to get the orders and to get the customers out as fast as possible. But yes, it's been very robust. And you know, I'm humbled every time I see the line backed out to the door. I'm very humbled by that because, you know, and the amount of people that have pledged to invest, over 1,000 persons, I'm like, wow, a lot of people they're validating what it is that we're doing, Mr. Lang.
You know, as someone who ran a restaurant, you get really excited when you see that crowd build up, but you also get nervous, right? Because you know what that could mean for customer service, right?
Oh, yeah, I know. And that's the biggest challenge. And one of the things I said, you know, when I was in and out today, you know, we're having some challenges this week with inventory because of the storm. So a lot of the trailers have been backed up getting into the country. So, you know, I've been running around trying to find stuff here and there to fill it. But, you know, so far, so good. And one of the things I told the customers that we're doing, we're developing an app so that they pay online. So when they come to the restaurant, they don't have to stand in line to pay after they've placed their order over the phone. They can actually just come and pick it up. So they were very grateful for that because we had about 15 people standing up in line with bags in hand ready to pay. And, you know, and so it becomes, we're trying to work diligently to get that app up and running before we open in December so that customers can have a much easier way to get in and out of the restaurant.
Well, all I can tell you is I'm not where you could send me one of them wraps right now. And I mean, I feel a little bad because just listening to your voice, I'm sitting down at that table with that spread of all those choices and I can't do anything about it. But I think Freeport is saying, you know, don't be cruel.
No, we're not going to be cruel. We're coming. We're coming, Mr. Lang. We're coming. We're coming.
So, so folks still have time. What should they do if they are interested in purchasing shares? Okay. And the shares are still
$9 a share, four shares. Okay. Yeah, four minimum shares at $36. Go to arawakx.com and just click on the Tropical Gyros logo, and that'll take you right through the portal. If you have any difficulties, please contact me at 565-1076, and I will get somebody to get information to you. As a matter of fact, our very good friend Fern, she's taking one of our lovely ladies up to AWACX right now to complete the process. So, you know, and then you can go into Cash and Go now and pay as well. So if you sign up online, you don't want to do it over line, you can actually sign up in line, make your pledge, and go into Cash and Go and pay for it.
Okay, well, you know, when I get in to NASA, I come in looking for you.
You better. I hope so, sir. I hope so.
All right, Chef Kevin Kalma of Tropical Gyros, folks. Don't forget, the platform is still open for your investments in Tropical Gyros. It'll be open until 5 o'clock, I think, on Friday, Chef?
That is correct. Yes, that is correct, Mr. Lang. That is
correct. Okay, and the location for Tropical Gyro, if somebody wants to take a bite in what they're investing, is where?
Rosetta and Mackey Street on the corner of Rosetta Street opposite Palmdale Furniture. Come on in and try a gyro. And like I say,
give me a list of the gyros that's available.
We have the jerk chicken, the jerk pork gyro. We have the lentil veggie gyro. We have the three cheeseburger gyro. We have the barbecue salmon gyro. We have the cracked lobster gyro. We have the cracked conch gyro. We have the sweet fire shrimp gyro. And then we have our complement of salads that you can get any of our proteins on top of our salads. So those of you who are health conscious and even want something healthier, you can get a salad instead of the gyro, and it'll be a nice, filled and fulfilling meal, and people are loving them. So come on down, try it out. And if you're an investor and you purchase Tropical Gyros, just remember that every time you eat as an investor, you're putting money back in your pocket.
I should have never asked you that question. I should never ask you to do that list. That was really unwise.
That's okay. We're coming to Freeport. We're coming.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, and take care, man. Thank you.
Yes, you too. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about BPL. We'll be back after this break. Take a stand, everybody. Come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a bit, I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan
with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Marched the car. The lady run into me, marched the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.1 Fresh News, Smart Talk, all day.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I trust again that you're well. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4259. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So I had occasion to watch the House of Assembly this morning as the Minister of Public Works, the Honorable Alfred Sayers, was giving his communication on BPL's rate hike. I am still waiting to actually get a copy of his statement because there are a couple of things in it I thought interesting to listen to. And comments are combined with the Prime Minister's comments about it at his announcement of the increase. Really made me wonder some more about what's going on at BPL. Now, let me start by saying something, right? Not too long ago, say 2003, 2004, BPL, then BEC, was a profitable public corporation. Anyone who wants to take a look at BPL's financials will see that. It was a profitable corporation. It did not require a subvention from the government of the Bahamas. Did not. It was, in fact, a net contributor in a way. Right? And it was holding its own. So when we look at the history of BPL, its predecessor, BEC. We have to remember that for decades, it carried itself. It had its own share of outages from time to time, but I don't know a power company that doesn't. It then became worse in time, and I think we have an explanation for some of that worse. But it wasn't until around 2003, 2004 that BPL really started to experience significant financial problems. Why? Well, BPL did a rate cut, not a rate increase. A rate cut not born of technical advice to cut the rate, but born of political advice to cut the rate, born of a promise to cut the rate. Okay? I'm going somewhere with this. the then Progressive Liberal Party promised that it would rate of electricity at BPL. It did that. It also reorganized some financial arrangements that BPL, that BEC then had, and it gave increases to BPL's workers through their unionized contract. So at the same time as it was cutting BPL's revenue and increasing its cost, the corporation began a downward slide. And that continued unabated for decades, for years, let's put it like that. Why would politicians promise you a rate cut? Because they know it would be popular, because they know it would be something you would support, because they know that you don't want a rate increase, even if it must, because that's what politicians will do, because popularity is the currency of politics, right? So fast forward, remember now, in between the time that time and now, any number of promises have been made about BPL and what could happen, should happen, the transformation of it, the transformation of the management, the transformation of the cost, the transformation of the mix of fossil fuel to renewables. Lots and lots and lots of promises made about it. But fast forward now to the day. February 28th, BPL, an announcement. You are going to get a rate increase of about 3+ cents from the 10.5 cents per kilowatt hour base you are paying to 13.7 cents. That's what BPL said. The chairman of BPL, now chairman of BPL, came back later on to say that was premature. The minister said that it was premature, and the government said it would not happen. So that leads me to believe that this was a technical decision being made by the people at BPL as to what was necessary for BPL. It was a technical decision because all the political appointees denied that it was something that should happen. But BPL said something when they made that announcement that let's just hit on the politicians. Lots and lots of, didn't like it, can't take an increase. That's what you said. And BPL pulled it back. But it was a technical decision being made because all the politicians were against it. Well, if the politicians are against it, then it had to be a technical decision being made by BPL. But BPL said something when they made the announcement. It said, if you don't do this now, you will pay more later for it. That's what it said. BPL said, if you don't do this now, you will pay 39% more, up to 19 cents per kilowatt hour more if you don't do this now. That's what BPL said. On February 28th of this year, that's what BPL said. So I'm listening in the House of Assembly, and Shannon Doyle Cartwright, Member of Parliament for St. Barnabas, stood up and asked the Prime Minister of the country, and asked the Minister, actually, why the delay in increasing the fuel surcharge from February to now? Why the delay? And none of them wanted to answer. No, the minister wouldn't answer. The deputy speaker just tried to move on because nobody would answer. And the deputy speaker said, it's a legitimate question, but the minister doesn't want to answer. I know he didn't. I know in retrospect, he might've thought I shouldn't have said it that way. But he said it's a legitimate question, but the minister doesn't want to answer. Do you know what it is like to have a legitimate question on the floor to a public office, a public servant, that the public servant doesn't want to answer? Well, anyways, the prime minister of the country, the minister of finance, stood up and he answered the question and he said, listen, you asked why the delay? Well, what the delay meant was, this is what he said, what the delay meant was that Bahamians did not have to pay that increased cost for 7 months because of the delay. That's what he said. For 7 months, it was better for the Bahamians. Now, that would have been a really solidly good political answer, but for this factor. I mean, it was really a good retort to Mr. Cartwright because he only asked about the delay. Well, I mean, if you're a citizen and someone delays an increase in a cost to you, you're not going to be angry about that. But what Mr. Cartwright didn't ask was, what was this cost, delay, costing the citizen now? That's the real question, because that is what has happened. BPL warned, don't do this now, you will pay more later. Well, your cost isn't going from 10.5 cents per kilowatt hour to 13.7 cents. That's not what it is. Within a year, lowest usage people of BPL, under 800 kilowatts per hour, that cost is going from 10.5 cents to, by August of next year, 18.5 cents. The basic 9 cents difference that BPL warned about. Can you imagine that? They saw this prospect and possibility in February of this year. Why? You know why they saw it? Let me tell you why they saw it. Because the forecast of fuel movements is fairly accurate. The trends tend to be fairly accurate. And given that they knew what their purchasing prices were for the fuel, knowing what their hedging arrangements were for the fuel, and they were hedging quite a bit. In the first instance, they were hedging about 80% of fuel at around $40 a barrel, and then they were hedging in the next cycle 50% around the same $40, and then 20 something percent around the same. So they were hedging based on what they were forecasting was likely to happen, but knew to some degree that you could have rates at around $100 plus per barrel. And so based on the numbers they were at, they knew that if they locked in the combination of things that they were doing, in particular on the hedging side of it, they could hold back some of the additional increase that would have to be endured. And as they said, so it has happened. So maybe sometimes when you think about what these technical people can't do, you might think more about what happens when political considerations enter the picture, because we decide to pander to the appetites of the consumers, not to have done what ought to be done, and to rejoice and celebrate from our political leadership that we are trying to keep this cost from you. But for how long? And what is that going to mean for me in the long run? Because one of the things that's true is, let me tell you what I learned in the last year. Patience, giving up smaller, short-term gains for bigger long-term gains. What is patient? Patience is giving up smaller short-term gains, meaning I am not going to have you pay any increase in fuel surcharge, even though the regulations require it. It is the law of BL passes on the fuel surcharge increases and decreases to consumers. So when the fuel surcharge, when the fuel cost goes down, BPL is required by law to bring down the fuel surcharge. When the fuel cost goes up, it is required by law to pass that on to consumers. But what happened in February of 28 was we used the excuse of the pandemic to ignore the requirement of the law and to be able to pander to the public by saying, I am going for the short term, give you this smaller gain, but it's going to cost you in the long run a bigger amount. That's what's happened. And so we have for users of under 800 kilowatts per hour, they will go in October, they'll go prior to October 1 from 10.5 cents per kilowatt hour to 12.5 cents per kilowatt hour. In December 1, they will go to 14.8% per kilowatt hour. In March of 2023, they will go to 16.5% per kilowatt hour. In May of 2023, they'll go to 18.5% per kilowatt hour. And then in September of 2023, they will start to see some decreases. And the people who use more will see even bigger increases. Why? Because we weren't patient. We weren't prepared to be patient. We weren't prepared to allow the law to take its course, because that is the wisdom that was built into it, because PPL is cost forever. And so here we are. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we can continue a little bit with this. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Langos. We'll be back after this break. Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, come the
world. Join Cleft of the Rock Foundation in conjunction with the Bahamar Foundation for the inaugural Rebuilding Villages Charity Golf Tournament, Sunday, October 2nd, at the world-famous Royal Blue Golf Course, Bahamar, Nassau, the Bahamas. An exciting and fun-filled day with lots of great prizes, but more importantly, an opportunity to give back to the communities of the Bahamas. Proceeds from this event will fund our essential programs, including Parenting on Purpose, raising awareness of the need for parent education. It's the Cleft of the Rock Inaugural Charity Golf Tournament, October 2nd. We're rebuilding Bliss, one family at a time. For more information and to sign up, visit cleftoftherockfoundation.org or email cleftoftherockfoundation@gmail.com.
Your child's future is full of super possibilities, so you need a super college savings plan to match. With an RF educational investment account, you can get returns well above the traditional savings account. You can use the funds to cover a variety of educational expenses at home or abroad. And if things don't go as planned, the funds are easily transferable. Plan for all your child's super possibilities with the RF Educational Investment Account. Get started today at rfgroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Ladies and to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Somebody sent me a text, says Juan McCartney attributed the change in profitability to Hubert Ingram's reconnecting 6,000 delinquent customers, 5,000 plus of whom remained delinquent for years after. He conducted a chronological account of BEC BPL for his entire show. Well, I didn't hear the entire show, and I didn't hear it, but anyone who looks at BPL's financial statements can easily chronicle when BPL's fiscal deterioration began, and it began under a Christie administration, for sure. The fact that in the Great Recession, Ingram required BPL to reconnect those 6,000 customers. Of course, that would contribute further to BPL's financial circumstances, because it means that you are requiring the company to carry a cost for people who wouldn't be contributing to revenue. So you can't deny that something like that would also hit the bottom line, but to suggest that that is the reason for the deteriorated profitability and start, no, that cannot be supported by the facts at all. Now, let me also say this: in that same period of time, and I happen to know it well, the country at the time when it happened, we transferred $50 million to BPL. And did a number of things to bring current BPL's arrears to public corporations in order to help salvage BPL's situation. Where did we get the $50 million from? I required BTC to declare a dividend. And that dividend payment of $50 million was what paid BPL and allowed it to be able to pay its bill to Shell. Okay, so while on the one hand, it may well be true that Ingram required that reconnection, and in the circumstances, one could understand why you would want to, and you can't deny that that would have contributed to some of the financial strain of BPL, because they had to carry that cost without the attendant revenue. They would have gotten some revenue back, because think about it, if everybody was not reconnected, you'd get something back from nobody. So even the 1,000 people that this statement would have claimed were paying would not have been paying, because they would not have been reconnected. I mean, they may not have been reconnected because they would not have had it to pay. But in any event, there was that would have added a strain to it. But at the same time, we were transferring tens of millions of dollars to BEC. And that transfer to BEC and the requirement to guarantee its loans started long before the Great Recession. At least years before the Great Recession, for sure, right? And so there is certainly a compounded set of circumstances. But in his administrations never did was to promise rate cuts in circumstances where we knew it was not tenable. We debated rate increases and whether they should be done and to what extent, but rate cuts were never contemplated. In that way. And the text says, said, this is one saying I said hampered the recovery, and I'm acknowledging that certainly could be, and he said, I clearly outlined the Ingram administration raised rates. Exactly. Yeah. So like I said, I didn't hear the comment. I'm just making the point that the deterioration certainly wasn't a recovery for BPL, actually, because BPL really was set in a very bad situation. And, you know, the issue was one of restructuring the company's financial circumstances in order to ensure that they could be sustainable, right? And the things I did catch that one indicated was that even former Deputy Prime Minister, now Prime Minister, Brave Davis indicated that BPL was at risk of becoming insolvent. Well, between the time he made that comment And now BPL's financial circumstances hadn't drastically improved. So anything done to cut its revenue or to limit its ability to recoup revenue and cost would only further exacerbate its insolvency issues. And so my basic point here, insofar as this is concerned, is one, the law, the regulations anticipated that cost of fuel increases, because it's not BPL's fault if the people they're buying from are increasing this cost. So you pass that on to customers. You have to bear it. We are the ones who are going to be using the electricity and the power, and they have to supply it, and they have to be able to pay their bills to supply it. So the law anticipates that. So when you then have a delay, as was had in February 28 of this year, in a way that was going to cost you more, you can't celebrate nothing now about what has happened at all, right? Because we are paying a higher price and a heavier cost because we did not want to do what the technician said needed to be done back then. And this is a typical example of some of the things that we do to stop the public from crying about changes that may cost them when they don't want it. And nobody wants higher cost. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Shivago Lang, your host. Welcome to Z Live. So glad you could join us. If at some point you want us, 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 4224796. That's 4224796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 4393043. Well, I promised that we were going to be having a conversation. The Securities Commission of the Bahamas. And we have with us today the Executive Director of the Securities Commission, Mrs. Christina R. Rule. Welcome, ma'am. Welcome.
Thank you, Shivago. Good afternoon, and good afternoon, Bahamas. Thank you for inviting us.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, y'all are on a media tour in celebration of World Investor Week 2022. Man, y'all needed to come spend a couple of days here talking to these people about this world of investing. But we are so glad that you could take this time to be with us. Now, World Investment Week is an initiative of the International Organization of Securities Commission, the global standard setter for securities markets regulation. And the global campaign raises awareness about the importance of investor education, protection, and the work of the International Organization for Securities Commission, and of which I'm sure the Bahamas Securities Commission is a member. Can you tell us what's the role and the function of the Securities Commission of the Bahamas?
Thank you, Shivago. Well, the Securities Commission of the Bahamas, for those of you who aren't familiar with our work, we're a financial services regulator. You know, there was a time I probably would have described us as a capital markets regulator, but I think we really are a financial services regulator, and we specifically focus on the regulation of conduct in the market. And so we administer five pieces of legislation now. One, the Securities Industry Act, which covers the capital markets, securities, activities. Also, the Investment Funds Act, which covers investment funds, investment fund administrators, and also now the regulation of investment fund managers. Also, the Financial and Corporate Service Providers Act, which have a range of activities, including money lending, corporate service, provision of corporate services, but just a range of financial and corporate services, non-banking and non-capital market space. We recently passed the Digital Assets and Registered Exchanges Act 2020, which is administered by the Securities Commission, and very recently, the Carbon Credits Trading Act, which is also administered by the Commission.
So let's build up this whole environment so people can see even more clearly what the commission does. So you have in the country and out there in the world, people who have an excess of funds. They've been able to spend less than they earn, save to make money with that money. They're looking to put that money to work. And then you have people, companies and the like who are interested in getting some of that money and offering a return for it. And so there's this opportunity for the two of them to connect, to get together so that one becomes an investor and one becomes a receiver of that invested money. But there is risk attendant to this, right? There is the possibility that people could lose this money altogether. There's the possibility that some of the people who purport to be who they say they are aren't the people who they say they are and aren't, don't have the honest. And somebody needs to be, especially when that market is formalized, somebody needs to be there saying, you know what, we need to oversee this to the extent possible so that at the very least, people have the information they need to make decisions that they need to make properly. Did I get that right?
That's exactly right. In fact, we need to have you on our tour. Because you're explaining this much better than we do. But that is exactly right. And so we are, in order for those markets that you just described to function, you know, in order for capital to meet those who are in need of capital, mm-hmm. we must ensure that the systems that are in place are being operated with integrity. And that is really the role of the regulators. We ensure the integrity of the market so businesses can thrive. You know, we don't do it in a vacuum or for the sake of doing it, but so businesses can thrive.
Right, because you want people to represent themselves appropriately, even significant, they need to reflect that to people. So you're not saying we're going to protect you from risk. We're going to let you be aware. We're going to create a circumstance in which you should be fairly informed about the risk and what it entails. And if you say you are this investor with this ability, we are going to have some standards that require you to verify that you are who you say you are.
Yes, absolutely. And we do that through various pieces of our legislation, whether it's investment funds, the Securities Industry Act, as well as in digital asset space. We are primarily concerned that adequate disclosures are being made to investors, to the investing public, so right. that they can make an informed and rational decision based on a reasonable level of information.
Right. So once people go into these laws, as some of us have had to read, they will see the various requirements of someone entering the public investing space to provide certain kinds of information and disclose that information. People could be aware that, listen, here, this is the nature of the investing that you are going into. And a lot of times, the disclosures that you are requiring, you're requiring more so for, let's call them the so-called average, not so sophisticated investor, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're primarily focused on protecting what we call the retail investor. That is the unsophisticated investor who probably is trying to build wealth rather than spending wealth they've already accumulated. And so we want to make sure that that average person has information in a way that is not confusing to them, that is very plain. And we assess the level of disclosures that are being made to ensure that they are at an appropriate level for the average person.
Now, let me ask you, because, you know, from time to time, there may be a Bahamian or a group of Bahamians who may decide they're going to open up a enterprise or something, and they're looking for some monies, and they go out there and they start asking family, friends, or maybe even others if they'd like to invest in something. You're not covering them, per se. They're not the ones who have to come and register under the various, right?
No, they're not. And I have to be very careful here because, you know, we from time to time, I have someone who would come to the commission and say, but, oh, you said we didn't have to be registered.
Right.
Well, there is a difference between going out to your very close family and friends and connected individuals and then going out to the broader public. And when you're in the realm of going out to the broader public, then that is where the commission becomes concerned.
Right.
Okay.
Now, can I also ask, people representing themselves as investment advisors also have to be careful, right?
So we require that persons who are providing investment advice, that they themselves are licensed with the commission. And so there are two levels of investment advice. We have a space where we call people who are giving financial advice, and they're not necessarily giving advice on securities. They're usually giving advice on budgeting and saving. So people who are giving advice on budgeting and saving and are solely in the realm of financial advice are to be registered with the commission. But if you're giving investment advice on securities, bonds, or other what we call capital markets investment, then you are required to be licensed with the commission. And no one in the Bahamas should be taking advice from persons who are unlicensed.
And again, that's part of the investor education to protect them from what could be unknowledgeable, unscrupulous persons putting themselves out there as investment advisors.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, you're called the Bahamas Securities Commission. Let's just talk about securities for people so they know, because I don't assume that people know what that means. But when we're talking about securities, what are we talking about?
We're talking about what we call equities or shares for the most part. Mm-hmm. We're also talking about bonds, government-registered stock, treasury bills in the U.S. We're talking about either and I mean, this is a very technical term, but we're either talking about debt or equity instruments.
Right. Or some combinations
or some combination of those. People
package them so that they become tradable instruments, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now you were under some kind of a mandate actually to do this investor education, because I know the PM has proclaimed October Investor Education Month, right? And so in recognition of the importance of investing in consumer education and protection, I mean, this is part of why you're doing what you're doing.
Yes, and so what you will find is throughout the month of October, we'll have various campaigns. So you might find some other person from the commission coming on the show, and we've been on other shows during this week, talking about specific information. And so, yes, you're right, Chivago. We do have a specific mandate. It's a statutory mandate that is actually written in the Securities Industry Act to protect investors. And what that usually means is outside of those disclosure requirements and other mechanisms we use, we also use other tools such as an education campaign, because we think that an investor who is well educated is probably best armed to deal with some of the market abuse that may be out there. We also aggressively pursue frauds and scams in the market. And you probably see from time to time a lot of the warnings that we issue. Sometimes we've had to issue cease and desist letters to various people who are operating in the market. These are all tools we use to protect investors.
And the thing about it is that people may not, like if you're not an investor, if you're not somebody buying bonds and shares, you think, well, what does that have to do with me? But the fact of the matter is, if something happens in the market that causes companies to shut down, well, what that means is, as an employee, you're going home without a pay.
Yes.
And the whole system could collapse, and that means everybody gets affected by it, and that's what you're trying to prevent.
Yes, absolutely. And two, Chivago, there are other ways where even persons who aren't in the market per se buying shares or bonds, there are other ways that they are targeted for market abuse. You know, we see a proliferation of frauds in the Bahamas, and I think there was an increase in them during the pandemic, when people are particularly hurting. A lot of them present in the form of Ponzi or pyramid schemes. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of Bahamians being sucked into those types of schemes, and it's very unfortunate. But these people, these fraudsters, they prey on people's vulnerabilities.
You also have people who have their savings in, say, for instance, pension funds, and these pension funds might be the ones investing in the capital markets. And if we don't regulate the market properly, then you get to lose that way, even though you never even realized you were in the market.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And so those are other means by which we also have to protect the markets. You know, when IPOs come to our market, we also have to ensure that they are providing adequate oversight and governance. And while we don't regulate their operations per se, we have to regulate their interaction with the public and their interactions, particularly with the investment public, whether that be professional or retail investors.
And particularly with respect to the information to disclose on an IPO, folks, is the initial public offering. That's where a company comes for the first time or so to the public and say, you know what, we want you to invest in this business because they're raising capital for expansion or restructuring, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah. Right. Now, you're a member of the International Organization of Securities Commission since 1996. What does your membership of that organization entail and do for you?
So in the same way for the banking industry, Basel is the standard setter. IOSCO is the standard setter for the securities industry and the capital markets. And so for the jurisdiction really to be taken seriously and to be seen as having a robust framework that is capable of interacting with cross-border transactions and interacting as intermediaries in the international markets, it's imperative for us first and foremost to be an IOSCO member. The second thing is that it's absolutely essential that we become a signatory to the IOSCO Multilateral Memorandum of Understanding. And we became a signatory to that MMOU, I think it was in 2013 or 14, somewhere around there. And then we became a signatory to the Enhanced Multilateral Memorandum of Understanding in 2000. As far as we are concerned, this jurisdiction, if we are going to be seen as best in class for regulation, this membership and these standings were the basics that were needed. Some of the other things that we've done, we've thrown ourselves also into the work of IOSCO, and so from this small little country, you know, we're sitting on about six IOSCO steering committees, working groups, or other larger committees. We're on IOSCO's committee with respect to international cooperation and enforcement. We're on the committee with respect to intermediaries. We're also a member of IOSCO's FinTech Task Force, and not only a member of that task force, but on the steering group. We're actually, because of the work we have been doing within that group, we were recently asked to pen a portion of a paper for the work stream. And so we think that these types of engagement are essential if we want to improve the standing of the jurisdiction in the international arena.
Now, somebody asked me to repeat who's on the show. This is Ms. Christina Rule, the executive director of the Bahamas Securities Commission. I have that right, right?
The Securities Commission of the Bahamas, but that's fine.
Securities Commission. No, yeah, that's right. I just wanted to make sure I had all the titles right and so people get it right. Someone is asking, how do I identify a Ponzi scheme?
So there are a couple of rules. There are a couple of rules of thumb, and the very basic is if it looks too good to be true, it usually is. But something a Ponzi usually does is that you will find that it relies heavily on the recruitment of new members, and so when you're seeing any type of investment program that is relying heavily on the recruitment of new members, for example, Zoom calls, or they're having events at a hotel to attract new members. I mean, they should be immediate red flags for any consumer to say that, look, they need to attract new members in order to pay out the older ones.
Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. And I often say to people, listen, If my getting paid is more about my getting you in than my selling products or services, then I need to be careful.
Yes.
Because real trade is predicated on distributing a value of some product or service to people. That's where people really earn. So, but if my money's earned because I'm recruiting you, and I'm hoping that I can make more money because more people I recruit rather than selling more products, then you're relying more on that recruitment, as you said, than on an actual value being granted to the public through some product or service.
Yeah. And if people really think about it, at some point, even if these schemes, for at some point they will crash because they will run out of people they can recruit.
Mm-hmm.
So when they run out of people who can recruit, who's ever put in their money last, they will lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is you just never know when that will be.
Somebody's texting asking, how does one become a licensee of the commission? But before you answer that question, we have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Okay, we may have missed them. Go ahead, ma'am. Somebody was asking about becoming a licensee of the commission.
So it really depends on the type of license you're seeking. The best thing to do is to contact the commission's supervision department. You can set up a meeting with us. We can walk you through what types of licenses you can have. We would also provide you with a bundle of application forms and other information that we require. So the processes themselves aren't very difficult. They may be tedious, but they're not very difficult. And certainly for certain types of licensees, it's easier than others. I would say too, for Bahamians who want to be entrepreneurs in the financial services space, we have a variety of licenses, particularly under the Financial and Corporate Service Providers Act, that may be suitable. So I would suggest, depending on the type of license you have, to first come to the commission and we can have a conversation and guide you through the licensing process.
In addition to IOSCO, you are also a member of the Global Financial Innovation Network?
Yes, we are. And this is another network. And they really are trying to be the leader in fintech regulation. And so we have been a member of that organization since 2021, early 2021.
Well, you know, you before, I'm going to ask you to address this when we come back because we're going to take a break, but you had to deal with equities, shares, you had to deal with bonds, and then you had to deal with all of these derivatives arising out of them. Now you got digital assets and all these kinds of things. Life is really becoming even more sophisticated, complicated in the security space. So we want you to turn to talk about that when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm here with Ms. Christina Roll, Executive Director of the Securities Commission of the Bahamas. When we come back, we will continue our discussion with them as they celebrate World Investment Week. We'll be back after this break.
You just got bumped up. Bundled fiber customers enjoy up to 3x the speed increase for free. That means if you have the Extreme 100 Plus Talk 24/7 bundle, or the Extreme 100 TV Max bundle, or even the Extreme 150 Plus Talk 24/7 Plus TV Max bundle, your internet speed just went to 300 megabits per second. Nothing to do. Just keep doing you.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM.
I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami. No problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever.
back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shavar Gulang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon, where we are speaking with Ms. Christina Roll of the Securities Commission of the Bahamas as they celebrate along with IOSCO World Investor Week 2022. Y'all have a lot of legislation that y'all oversee or governs your activity and that you have to update from time to time. Right?
Yes, we're currently doing extensive amendments to our Digital Assets and Registered Exchanges Act. We're also doing amendments to the investment funds regime. We've actually completed a first draft of a complete overhaul of the Securities Industry Act, which is aiming to modernize the Securities Industry Act, which really hasn't had significant updates since it was enacted more than 11 years ago. And so, yes, we're quite busy with a legislative agenda that I would say is probably quite aggressive.
And you have your business capital rules 2021 that represents, I think, some updates that deals with crowdfunding and all that kind of stuff.
So the business capital rules are interesting because some of the things that the commission has observed over the past, I would say, 15 years, entrepreneurs still have a very difficult time accessing the capital markets in order to raise funds. And we didn't just see this happening in this jurisdiction, but we saw it happening around the world. And what you may recall, Shivago, is probably about 5 years ago, crowdfunding became a very popular means of raising funds for entrepreneurs. And other regulators around the world, like Canada, the U.S., and others, embraced crowdfunding within their capital markets activity. And so we decided to do the same thing in the Bahamas. And so we developed what we call the business capital rules. It allows entrepreneurs to raise up to $3 million. What those rules do is all of the traditional rules, the regular rules that an IPO have to comply with, they are relaxed, bearing in mind that some of those requirements are cost prohibitive for the average entrepreneur. And so, but they are relaxed, but we address the investor protection issues by putting a cap on the amount any one investor can make into those types of investments.
Okay, so, and that's the reason for the cap, is that you're saying, okay, I'm relaxing the rules, but because of that, I'm not going to let you go out there and raise 50, 20, $30 million in the public because we're relaxing the rules.
That
is correct. Is your update now, or is it $3 million still?
It's now $5 million, sorry.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then this is for small and medium-sized businesses. And what qualifies a person as a company or business as small or medium-sized?
So it's generally someone who has gross annual revenues of up to $1.5 million is a small business, and up to $3 million could be a medium-sized business.
Okay. So you don't expect these companies making $20 million, $30 million a year to be trying to get in under these rules?
Absolutely not. We think they can afford to go the normal route.
Right. What is the Inter-American Regional Committee?
So the Inter-American Regional Committee is one of four regional committees of IOSCO, which is the International Organization of Securities Committees. And in the Inter-American Regional Committee is really every securities or commodities regulator within this hemisphere. So from Canada all the way up to the north, down to Chile in the south. And so that includes North, South, Central America, and the Caribbean, and all of the regulators in that sphere. So we have some regulators in IARC who regulate some of the largest capital markets in the world. So, for example, the USSEC is a part of the IARC, the CVM of Brazil, which is another large capital market, all of the regulators in Canada. The Bahamas capacity, I'm currently in the vice chair position of that committee. And as a result, we have a place on the board of IOSCO.
Okay, now I saved the best for last. You know, everywhere I go in the Bahamas, people, or even no matter where I am, I get calls, I get texts, I get emails. Shivago, what do you think about cryptocurrency? What do you think about digital assets? This is something I should invest in, blah, 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 blah. And there was all this buzz, certainly up a few months ago with FTX and all this kind of stuff. And you just recently updated your digital assets and registered exchanges act, I think. But talk to us about that. I mean, what's happening in that space and what is that creating for you in the way of regulation?
Okay, so I'm not going to answer the question for anyone on whether they should invest in cryptocurrency. Yeah,
exactly, right?
Not,
that's what I say too.
Right? But you'll note, Chirago, first of all, that the act isn't called crypto. It's called digital assets. And we were very specific about that because digital assets encompass a whole lot of things, including cryptocurrencies.
Right.
And so the act really is based on capital markets principles of raising capital. And you will find that we have provisions for initial token offerings that are based on some of the same principles of IPOs. And we also have provisions for other types of digital asset businesses, such as exchanges and other persons who are providing services in the digital asset space. Now, what is different here is that whereas we're used to the advisor in the security space, the activity is slightly different in this space, and you often find a lot of different types of activity bundled within the same service provider in a way that it's not bundled in the same service provider in the traditional securities market. But we did think that given our experience regulating the capital market, regulating intermediaries in the capital market, that we were particularly positioned to develop legislation for this space. And we set out to do that in 2018. Now, during that time, we of course, being very involved in the work of IOSCO, were very much engaged in the conversations that were going around the table among securities regulators around the world. And a lot of those conversations were really focused on whether a crypto is also a security or whether it can fall within the scope of a capital markets regulator. And we realized something in listening to those conversations. We realized that the reason those regulators were so focused on that question was because they were limited by the perimeters of their scope. And so they could not go beyond their mandate in their legislation. And so in order to capture this activity, which they were correct, it's capital markets type activity, they had to find a way to cast a net over the activity. And so we decided in the Bahamas that, oh, look, we have an opportunity here because of our size, because of our ability to be nimble, that we can develop legislation that can holistically address it within an existing space, which it doesn't always quite fit into. There are some very interesting ways that digital assets is disrupting the traditional capital markets. And so it's not always quite fitting neatly into boxes that the securities space have. And so we decided that, look, we have an opportunity to develop something holistically to address those concerns using the same types of principles that we know of from regulating other activity. And so that's exactly what we've done.
And to your point, if you look at, say, the digital currency, in oftentimes in the traditional space, you have intermediaries that are in between the investor, the traders, right? Mm-hmm. But in this space where you're using the technology of blockchain, you can have direct interaction between those two where there's no intermediary involved. And so in your traditional regulations, you would be regulating an intermediary, but we're in this space. Now the question is, how do you regulate these two people directly dealing with each other?
So Zhivago, you hit really on the point that I think we'll have regulators scratching their heads over the next couple of years, because we see in a big way disintermediation or the removal of intermediaries taking place. And regulators have to wrap their heads around this very issue, because we're largely used to regulating intermediaries. And that is how we get to the market. And so we have to reimagine those types of scenarios and ensure still that the investor protection elements are still there.
You know, it really is interesting, because then you're wondering, what in the world are they talking about? When you look at it, right, like the regulators don't regulate you as a borrower, per se. They don't regulate the lender, per se. They regulate the people who bring the borrower and the lender together, the bank, or the financial institution.
That's right.
And now you have in this environment of, say, digital assets, people saying, listen, I don't need nobody to bring me together with nobody. I can deal with these people myself. Now, the risk, though, of a financial collapse, if that environment becomes big enough, still exists. And so the question is, what do you do about that risk to minimize it? But at the same time, you don't typically go regulate private people dealing with their interactions with each other.
No, we do not. And this will be a very interesting challenge that I think we don't have all the answers to this yet, but it'll be interesting.
I could see that. Now you have some some things you're doing in respect of the rules, though, related to these digital assets.
Yes.
Amendments are underway.
Yes. So you would. I'm sure you've been following what has been happening over the past, I would say, 6 months or so with the so-called crypto winter, and in observing those events as well as in keeping up with some of the evolution of the space generally, there are a number of things that we think now that we have those lessons now that we have seen how the space is evolving, we want to address. And one big issue is stable coins, and you will see that we will put out a framework very soon with respect to stable coins. That framework is very to give a very precise definition of what can qualify as a stable coin. So when you see this these coins that look like that Terra Luna coin token that was a so-called algorithmic stable coin, that will definitely not fall in within that definition of a stable coin. We'll also put out some transparency and disclosure requirements with respect to stable coins and how they're calculating and how they're advising the public with respect to their peg. We are also intending to address this area that it's a very growing area of non-fungible tokens. And while we addressed it somewhat already in DAO, and basically we basically said in DAO that a non-fungible token that is not a financial asset is not covered by DAO. We are seeing now non-fungible tokens that do look like financial assets. And so we want to address scenarios where they do look like financial assets and they are involved in capital markets activity, that they will fall within the scope of DAO. And so,
you know, I might say that for all the reasons you are explaining now, I tell people, listen, if you don't have an emergency reserve and some savings put away that you can invest in traditional assets, fooling around with digital assets with that lack of sophistication might be something you might think about for a little while longer. Because you are, as a regulator, having to grapple with the movements and dynamism of this area, where people who are much, much more unsophisticated and unaware are trying to grapple.
I agree with you, Shivago. Certainly, this no one should be going into this with the intention of just speculating. I mean, that's how you lose your shirt. And so you must have a sound reason and disposable income, sufficient disposable income that you want to get into this space with. But certainly there are a lot of speculators out there, but speculation should not be the realm of the retail investor.
You have a lot more going on in that these amendments that you're looking at, whether that's staking or I don't know, you have DeFi, is that?
Yeah, that's DeFi. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's decentralized finance.
Right, and the framework for derivatives of crypto assets. I mean, just a lot. You guys had a lot going on.
Yes, and I mean, I think that the space is evolving so rapidly, but we think it's imperative for the Bahamas. Again, if we want to be taken seriously, we have to keep up with the evolution. And so staking is an area where, you know, people are putting their assets with exchanges and other digital asset businesses. Some types of tokens, they give rewards and they verify transactions by means of what is called a proof of stake. And so clients' assets are being used in that verification process, and rewards are given to the exchange as a result. And what we're saying is, well, if you're earning rewards as a result of your clients' assets, then at a minimum you have to and give them the option to opt out of that.
We're gonna take this final break, but when we come back, you have something called called Project Butterfly. I'm very interested to hear what that is all about. Ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Ms. Christina Roll of the Bahamas Securities Commission, the executive director of the commission. And we're talking about World Investor Week with her and all the work that they do together with all the other securities commissions around the world in trying to protect investors from undue risk. We'll be back right after this break.
Your child's future is full of super possibilities, so you need a super college savings plan to match. With an RF educational investment account, you can get returns well above the traditional savings account. You can use the funds to cover a variety of educational expenses at home or abroad. And if things don't go as planned, the funds are easily transferable. Plan for all your child's super possibilities with the RF Educational Investment Account. Get started today at rfgroup.com.
Join Cleft of the Rock Foundation in conjunction with the Bahamar Foundation for the inaugural Rebuilding Villages Charity Golf Tournament, Sunday, October 2nd, at the world-famous Royal Blue Golf Course, Bahamar, Nassau, the Bahamas. An exciting and fun-filled day with lots of great prizes, but more importantly, an opportunity to give back to the communities of the Bahamas. Proceeds from this event will fund our essential programs, including Parenting on Purpose and for Parent Education. It's the Cleft of the Rock Inaugural Charity Golf Tournament, October 2nd. We're rebuilding villages, one family at a time. For more information and to sign up, visit cleftoftherockfoundation.org or email cleftoftherockfoundation@gmail.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Storm.
back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today while we speak with the executive director of the Bahamas Securities Commission, Ms. Christina Rohl. And we're talking about, they're celebrating World Investor Week this week, along with IOSCO, the International Organization of Securities Commission. And their effort is now to let you know what they do to try to protect you as an investor from undue risk. How many licensees does the Securities Commission oversee now, you'd say?
If you include investment funds, it's well in excess of about 1,400.
Okay. And interestingly enough, our licensees could span from just pure securities brokerage firms to even under the Financial and Corporate Service Providers Act, some law firms could come under that act. Am I correct on that?
Those who are providing corporate services.
That's
services,
correct. That's right. That's exactly.
Correct. That's correct.
So it's a variety of people that you have to deal with on a regular basis in terms of licensees.
A very broad range, and both internationally and locally.
Right, that's what I was going to say, because you have some significant institutional people, and then you may even have some partnerships and individuals. It's really a varied group. So what is the Butterfly Project?
So while we have done what we think a good job being externally looking in terms of the development of legislation, our international engagements, even our local engagements, we think now is a very good time for us to turn inward and address our operations and the way we are interacting with our licensees. And so Project Butterfly is really a digital transformation within the commission itself. We are automating all of our processes and procedures. So from the moment the licensee begins to interact with the commission, that would be a digitized process where that would be online. The processing of any application of the licensee would flow from that point straight through to the supervision of that licensee. And so we're going through a complete, what we call a digital transformation. And we think that will both improve our response times, our ability to service our licensees, and the user experience with the commission itself.
If the general public wants to know more about the Securities Commission, its work, what it does, about the legislation, and what have you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So they can visit the commission's website, www.scb.gov.bs. They could also follow us on social media, on Facebook, on YouTube. I think I've been under pressure from the millennials at the commission to set up a Twitter.
Who isn't, right?
Instagram account. Listen. Oh, I'm told now we have a Twitter already, you see?
Okay. So you got a Twitter handle.
And so you can follow us on those social media sites. You can find out a lot of information. On our website, we have a very big investor protection section, actually, where they can find out a lot of information about various type of investment schemes and find out more information about how to protect themselves.
Unless I'm mistaken, you also have a listing of your registrants, right?
That's correct, and you can find that on our website. And I would say once our Project Butterfly is completed, that list will be a live list that will be searchable, and you'll be able to interact and see a lot more information than you're able to see now.
Okay. Okay, well, listen, I mean, this has been fantastic. You helped us understand quite well the work you're doing, the things that's going on right now, and how people who are looking at investing might approach getting more information and education. After all, the key is education. I mean, that's the key. The key is knowing, having information, and being able to make good, sound decisions based on it, right?
That is correct. And Shivago, before I go, if I can use your show, Just to make an announcement, that the Securities Commission of the Bahamas will be co-hosting in January 2023 the very first D3 Bahamas FinTech Festival. We are co-hosting with the government of the Bahamas. The dates for the festival are the 24th through the 26th of January. We think that the event will be something unlike the Bahamas has ever seen before. And we think that it will really be one of these key annual events to solidify the Bahamas' position as a key player in this fintech arena.
Wow, that's huge. Well, listen, maybe they keep us informed, and Bob, we'd like to help you get the word out.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Christina Rule, Executive Director, Bahamas Securities Commission, helping us understand what's going on in this World Investor Week. Come back anytime, ma'am. We're happy to have you.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll talk again tomorrow. Y'all have a great evening. God bless you.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody.